This podcast is brought to you by Learn Prime. Start your journey to becoming a great developer at learn.thoughtbot.com.
Giant robot smashing into other giant robots.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Giant Robot Smashing into Other Giant Robots podcast. My name is Ben Orenstein, and I'm here today with Josh. So today's podcast is a little navel-gazy, I guess. We figured that we would talk a little bit about our positions. So you and I both became managing directors recently, and so we thought we'd sort of swap some questions. The innovation is happening in the question format.
Yeah.
I told Josh he could ask me questions, which is a bit of a reversal. I'm used to being the aggressor here. Mm-hmm. But I figured we kind of just alternate and see how it goes.
Yeah, that sounds good.
But do you want to just start up by telling me about what you're doing now?
Sure. So I've been a developer at ThoughtBot for 4 years. I'm now managing director of the Boston office. So from what I understand, and again, this is probably about 2 weeks in, basically, I'll be dealing with all the sales aspects. So the goal there is to bring on clients, making sure that we're profitable and making money and our developers and designers are, you know, staying employed. That's one big goal. Then the human resources aspect. So just doing code review or not code reviews, the in-person
reviews.
Code reviews. Exactly. Yeah. So quarterly reviews and one-on-ones just to make sure that there's communication between developers and designers with me and, you know, the leadership at ThoughtBot, mm-hmm. you know, making sure that everybody's happy. People are working on what they want to work on. If they have any, you know, suggestions or anything like that, ways that, you know, I can do my job better and make it easier for them to do their jobs, you know, that there's that aspect. Mm-hmm. And then the advisorship aspect. And basically that's, you know, for all the clients that we have coming into the office, there needs to be a non-technical face. So there, ideally, there's a non-technical face to that client just to make sure that, you know, we're handling scheduling because I have more insight into scheduling, utilization, and making sure that they're happy with, you know, the work that we're doing.
Mm-hmm. You touched on reviews a little bit. Have you done any reviews yet?
I've done pair reviews. So Matt Jankowski, our COO, has been doing reviews for years and years, right? Mm-hmm. So I've been sitting in on reviews. The goal is to go through every designer and developer's review at the Boston office once with him, just so I get a feel for how reviews go and kind of the topics that we cover. And once I've rotated with all of that, then I'll be taking over that fully. So
do you feel any awkwardness around doing that?
No, I mean, it feels straightforward. You know, being here for a while, I know everybody fairly well, mm-hmm. You know, and the goal is to know everybody even more. But, you know, for the most part, yeah, everything is kind of out in the open anyways. And I understand what's going on and what people are good at, what people, you know, want to get better at. And, you know, it's just a matter of going through. And
for me, at least the majority of my reviews have been like fairly collaborative.
Right.
Like there's like a little bit of feedback, most of which was like never a surprise.
Right. Exactly.
And then it was kind of like, so what do you think of that last project we just did? And it was kind of almost just like a chance to talk about stuff.
Right. Yeah. And that's the goal. And with the one-on-ones, which are happening in Denver and in San Francisco, basically it just improves or increases that amount of communication. So those are less formal and happen even more frequently. So the goal is to have one a month and, you know, basically go over the same types of stuff. Mm-hmm. Just making sure they're happy. If there's any issues, ideally that would come up. And because there's that constant flow of communication, every meeting should be more informative, take less time. Mm-hmm. Not that time is a, you know, a bad thing, but just things will happen more quickly.
Right.
And we'll be able to both react and also be proactive because there's more communication. So we have a better insight as to what's going on.
Makes sense. If you're doing one-on-ones once a month, you get about 30 of them a month. That's going to make you a busy guy.
It is. So I think the goal there is to either couple them with our coffee walks. So, you know, to give a background to those who aren't familiar, in ThoughtBot, in the Boston office, we, you know, in the afternoon go and take a coffee walk. And a lot of times it's not even to get coffee. It's just to stretch our legs and get outside, the office for 10, 15 minutes. So it sounds like in San Francisco and in Denver, they've been doing those at that time. So it doesn't really impact people's day-to-day work, but, you know, you're able to talk informally and make sure that everything's going well.
Cool.
So,
all right, do you have a question for me? You want to hit me with something?
So as a managing director, you're now responsible for Learn's success at a financial level. Has this impacted your view of the business? And have you made any changes to the product because of it? And are there any future plans impacted by you taking over as managing director?
The managing director thing is kind of a formalization of stuff that was already happening.
Uh-huh.
So Chad, our CEO, and I have been working on it together since the start of the year, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of can't help but think of things from a financial point of view.
Right.
I'm sort of motivated by dollars, even when I don't even care about the dollars that much.
Right.
And so I've been thinking about Learn from a financial point of view from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I have this mindset kind of all the time. Like when we first started chatting about the podcast, someone suggested the podcast and Chad was like, do you want to host it? And I was like, no, because it's never going to make any money.
Right.
And I just wasn't really interested in that. And I ended up, I'm glad I changed my mind on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I sort of just have that focus anyway.
Yep.
And so, not really. So I guess it hasn't changed. Mm-hmm. I am focused on the financial direction. I care a lot about the numbers, but that's just kind of my natural MO anyway.
Cool.
And we do. It's interesting. So we were talking the other day about what our mission is,
mm-hmm.
Because it's good to kind of be on the same page with that. And it's funny. You have the mission, which is your meaning in life, but then there's also that the other thing, which is always going, which is you have to make money too.
Mm-hmm.
So if your mission is to educate developers and to make more awesome Rails developers in the world, that's awesome. But you have to also do it profitably,
right?
Otherwise, you've kind of failed, at least as a business.
Mm-hmm.
You mightn't have failed as a nonprofit, but we're not a nonprofit.
So it seems like there's a lot of polarization in some of the feedback that you guys have got. I think a lot of people, they either absolutely love it or they compare it to Railscasts or other learning software.
Totally.
Right? How big of an issue is this? How do you kind of address those concerns? Is it a matter of just not relaying what you're providing to your users? Or, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think there are a couple things at play. One is... kind of what you're alluding to is some people say, well, Railscast is $9 a month.
Exactly.
And you're $99 a month. And so why would I pay for this?
Right.
And I view those in two ways. One is partially a failure on our part.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when people say that, it says to me, we haven't really done a good job of selling what we're doing.
Right.
And maybe our landing page isn't good enough, and so people come in with the wrong impression, or maybe it's that our dashboard isn't showing them well enough, what they have access to,
right?
Or maybe it's that we need more automated emails that tell them, hey, you're missing out on this thing that you have access to that you should be doing. So partly I think of it as a kind of a failure on our part,
right?
Or at least indicator okay, we're not doing an awesome job of making sure everyone knows about the value they get. And part of it is just that some people aren't your customers.
Right.
If $9 a month is your price ceiling, then that's okay. But you're not going to be a happy Learn customer ever.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are some people I'm happy to not have as customers. Not because they're bad people. It's just that's fine. Under your value scheme,
mm-hmm.
I can't justify $99 a month.
Right.
You're getting access to Thoughtbot developers. You're getting this private forum. You're getting some things that I think are awesome for making your learning go faster. But if you don't have the cash or don't want to invest the cash to go faster,
mm-hmm.
then that's okay.
Right.
And partly it's us and partly it's them. And we're working on the first one.
Uh-huh.
That's something worth improving. But the second one, it's just we don't sweat it when people are I'm not going to do it, too expensive. Mm-hmm. It's okay, I get it. That's fine.
Cool.
I wanted to ask you, one of my favorite things is having a new person on a project.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our sort of internal philosophies is the newest person to the project is really useful at pointing out what's broken and
right.
Fixing processes and things like that. Mm-hmm. So you have the freshest eyes in terms of these processes at Thoughtbot that are
right.
sort of at management level. What has seemed most broken so far?
Oh boy, that's a good question. I'm probably going to upset some people.
that makes it a perfect question. let's say, what could use the most improvement?
Right. So I think the communication between leadership and management, whatever you want to call it, and the designers and developers, the people who are actually writing code on a day-to-day basis.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm speaking from experience based on, how I was working as a developer and just some of the things that I noticed, oftentimes it would be a very quick rotation where it'd be okay, I'm finding out this week, or hey, next week, you're going to rotate off onto a totally different project. And having to spin up on that and be able to spin down on the current project and, kind of wrap up any loose ends that I need to wrap up because, hey, I only have 4 days left on this project,
yep.
right? So that's, I think, the biggest thing is just relaying that sort of information and doing reviews and some of the other things where it just, you know, they're, to give it a little bit of a background, Matt Jankowski, our COO, was basically acting managing director and COO in the Boston office, right? So the problem was he was basically overtasked. Not basically, he was overtasked.
Yeah.
And just did not have enough time to do every single thing that he needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And certain aspects of the managing director of Boston suffered, and certain aspects of him being COO suffered.
Mm-hmm.
So the goal here is for me to, as managing director, be able to take over that and, you know, keep my workload a little bit lower so that I'm able to address everything that needs to be addressed as managing director. So, like I said, the thing that I'm coming in and focusing on pretty heavily is just improving that sort of communication with the quarterly reviews, the monthly one-on-ones, and trying to keep our developers and designers as informed as possible about, you know, projects they're rotating onto, and kind of getting feedback on what they want to work on and taking that into consideration when we do rotations.
It's not surprising to me that you say that you're like, your answer was sort of like communication,
mm-hmm.
because it's, to me, that's so often the root cause of problems and also the solution to them,
mm-hmm.
is like, people just need to be communicating more, yeah. and better.
And it's so often a very low hanging fruit. It's like, okay, it takes 5 minutes to say, listen, you know, I found this thing out about whatever you're working on the next 2 weeks. This is what I know right now. It very well may change and it probably will change,
mm-hmm.
but I'm letting you know right now as much as I know so that you're at least prepared for it. And I think that's enough to, you know, move us in the right direction. And there's, you know, there's most definitely still issues. Like, I caught myself this past Friday. I found out a developer was rotating onto a new project, found out in the morning at like 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning. And he asked me at the end of the day on Friday, like, hey, what's going on? I'm like, oh, crap, I should have told you,
mm-hmm.
this is what's actually going on. And I totally forgot. And I think a lot of that is just my muscle memory is all around coding and product design and stuff. And I need to convert it to be a little bit different and a little bit more about communication with, you know, all the designers and developers that I'm overseeing at this point. So.
Totally. Yeah. So you touched on this really briefly, but you said that, so you're new into this role, and before, mm-hmm. you've experienced times where there's been a bit of a communication barrier.
Mm-hmm.
How do you have any thoughts on how to like kind of maintain or how to improve the flow of information? Because I think there's a little bit of a natural separate like divide that happens. It's
right.
Like, okay, if you are sort of managing me or supervising me or doing my review, then like there's just a little bit more of a barrier than there would be if we were just purely colleagues,
right.
coworkers. Any thoughts on how you're going to keep that working?
It's tough because there has to be a clear line of leadership, you know, and people have to know actually, you know, and I hate the word boss, but I am their boss at this point. Like, I am overseeing, you know, you and making sure that, you know, you're successful at this company. And that's my responsibility now. But having been here for 4 years, I think that because I have close relationships with most of the people that I work with, I think it's going to be a little bit more natural. And I think a lot of it is just encouraging people to continue to communicate and let me know, like, hey, I am here for you. Help me help you, kind of thing. Right.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't do anything unless I know there's an issue. So I think it's just constant reminders. And, you know, Chad, our CEO, had said, you know, listen, I am your boss. You can come to me with literally anything and I will try and help you.
Yeah.
Right. And it's weird to me to be told that, you know, because there were other, you know, layers of communication before going straight, you know, I would never go straight to Chad usually unless it was like a big issue. And luckily there haven't been any big issues, but that reminder to me was like, oh, that's right. I need to get this through my head. And I think, you know, maybe there is that kind of barrier. And I think maybe it's just a reminder, you know, constant reminder, listen, I'm here to support you. You need to tell me how, you know, what I can do to make your life better. So.
Got it. All right, you want to hit me with another one?
So because you're running this business and a lot of it is based on flows through the website, what sort of metrics are you guys using to track churn and retention and all that kind of stuff?
Mm-hmm.
And as an aside and something you can answer a little bit later is like, what is the single most interesting point of information that you found out about your users?
As far as metrics, so right now we track like current number of subscribers. So we have three different levels of plans right mm-hmm. now. We track the number of subscribers, churn rate, lifetime value. So I think we kind of suck at metrics.
Mm-hmm.
Part of me is like, well, we don't exactly have enough data or enough users to like make certain metrics interesting. Like we don't get enough signups, for example, to do like A/B testing on the landing page.
Okay.
And like there are some ideas that I'd like to try, and like we make a lot of qualitative improvements. We're like, okay, the dashboard needs this change. It needs to be better this way.
Right.
But we don't test those changes in like a statistically significant way. But we kind of can at this point.
Right.
With like, you know, a few hundred people, it's like you're just not going to get good data from that. But overall, I think I give us like a C in metrics, or like,
okay.
Like a C minus. I think we do enough just to like kind of have like some really high level indicators of, and like my one indicator that I think about mostly is churn.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, how long does roughly the average person stay? Like what's
right.
our, because, you know, the longer, the better that number. To me, that's a pretty good indicator of how good a service we've built.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd like us to do more. And I'd like more input on what would be good. Like one of the things I think I'm missing out on is talking to people that run really similar businesses and what kind of things that they watch and that give them good data.
Mm-hmm.
And we've tossed around a few ideas, but it's a tricky area to me. Mm-hmm. So we've mostly been not flying blind, but we've been flying like we use our judgment as opposed to numbers so much to
right.
make our changes. And I think we've built something pretty great with it, but I have no doubt that there are useful things we could track and,
mm-hmm.
and use to make other decisions that we are not.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that I'd like to get better at.
Yep.
And I need to sort of work on personally. And was there a second part to that?
Yeah. So it was.
Single
so I
best.
Guess I have another question on top of that too. But the first one was, you know, what's the single most interesting point of data that you've gathered from, you know, your metrics?
So one thing I did was I built us a customer happiness index, which
okay.
is an idea we stole from HubSpot, which is basically you assign certain point values to things that people have done. So it's like, oh, if you've signed onto the forum, you get 10 points. If you've taken a workshop, you get 20 points. And
mm-hmm.
like just sort of created an arbitrary scale for these things based on how valuable I thought they were. And the interesting thing to me was when we ran this data, we realized that there were like 20% of the people at the bottom that were like barely doing anything.
Okay.
And it's like you've been a customer for like 4 months and you've paid us hundreds of dollars and like you're almost not using the product at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the most surprising outcome there. And so that led us to do some things. We're using Intercom now to handle our messaging to people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've started adding these things that do intelligent checking of how much you're using the product and then sort of encourage you to use it in better ways if you're
mm-hmm.
not. So it's like, hey, you know, it's been a few weeks that you signed up like 2 weeks ago and you haven't logged onto the forum yet. So it's like, hey, you know, we have this great forum. You should really check it out because
mm-hmm.
it's actually pretty cool and there's good information there. And so I think that's... We're starting to take steps to deal with that,
right.
But it was surprising to me. I guess these people are on like corporate credit cards or don't care or something. But it's like you're signed up and you're paying us money, but you're really not doing that much with it.
Do you have any users who've been users since the very beginning?
That's a good question.
Of the subscription service.
I'm not sure. I don't
okay.
know what how long our oldest users. We have a few people that are definitely could be.
Okay.
There have been a few people that have been there for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that would be like February
mm-hmm.
was when we officially launched. But it's interesting, like through Intercom, talking to people that like have been around since before. Like there were different tiers, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I had one guy who's like, "I'm going to cancel now because you know I've taken the workshops and I like the rest of the stuff, but you know the $99 is too high if I'm not mm-hmm. taking workshops." And I was like, "Well, you know, we have this lower tier plan that lets you retain access to these things you like." And he's like,
mm-hmm.
"Oh, when I signed up, that didn't exist."
Yeah.
And I was like, "Oh yeah, this has been changing a lot."
Mm-hmm.
So I'd have to look. I'm curious who our oldest customers. We should
yeah.
send them a T-shirt,
mm-hmm.
him or her. So I got a question for you. I read a blog post about 100-day goals.
Okay.
Do you have any roughly 100-day goals for you and or Thoughtbot?
Oh, boy. Yeah, I have a few. So at the 100-day mark, ideally, I will be acting as advisor for all of the, you know, projects in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're close to that right now. I've been taking over as advisor for the majority of the projects. There's still a few where... it either doesn't make sense or we don't want to just because the project is wrapping up soon
mm-hmm.
or there's just a lot of domain knowledge there and a lot of history and it just, you know, we just don't want to do it. But for all upcoming projects, you know, I'll be acting as advisor. So acting as advisor and just, you know, I think as an advisor, there's a lot of insight into how people are working and kind of the goals just at a general level anyways. And to be able to have a full handle on that, I think is going to be really good. One-on-ones fully implemented and, you know, feeling good about that and making sure that those are happening.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point too, ideally, you know, the quarterly reviews will be fully handed over and I'll feel comfortable with that. I think those are the big ones that I can think of right off the top of my head. It's like, these need to be done. I also want to, at some point, ideally within, you know, the 100 days, is start getting more developers and designers involved in the sales aspect. I think that sales is a pretty important part of what we do, because it's, again, how we make money, right? And while I'm not fully confident in it yet, I feel like in those 100 days I would be, and at that point I will want to bring, you know, whoever's interested in, so they can sit in and start taking over that as well. One of the reasons why we brought in managing directors in both Boston and San Francisco is because the people acting as that right then, you know, both Dan Croak, our CMO, and Matt Jankowski, our COO, they were overwhelmed. And if they were the only people doing sales at an office, that bus number is one, right? Mm-hmm. So if anything bad happens to them, well, sales stops unless someone else steps up.
Yeah.
So I think the goal there is to introduce that more people into that process, just so that I'm not the only person handling sales. Mm. You know, that also gives developers and designers the ability to have an impact on what they're working on.
Totally.
So I think that's...
That was something that shocked me about the sales... what surprised me about the sales process was how often we turned down people, mm-hmm. and like how honest we were about it. Like, I remember having a meeting with someone with Dan, like I sat in on a sales call with Dan back when he was in the Boston office, and then afterwards we talked about it, and we were like, it seems like this person's like kind of being controlled by their VC and doesn't have a clear vision for what they want to do and is like jumping all around, so it's probably not a good fit. We just talked about this, and then he like wrote an email and said exactly that. It's like, it seems like you're being controlled by your venture capitalists and don't have a clear vision. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It was like, not only are we telling you no, but like we're giving you extremely honest feedback.
Right. I mean, it goes back to communication. If you don't tell someone what's going on and why you're not working with them, they, you know, you might just get yanked around for months without anyone accepting, you know, and choosing to work on your product until you realize, oh, this is the actual issue. I need to address this. So I think, you know, it all goes back to that communication aspect and just explaining to people, this is how you can fix your problems.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
They're definitely not easy conversations or emails to have, but at the same time, they're totally necessary usually.
Yeah. I've come to really appreciate the power of the truth. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes people get upset with you for what you think is the truth, but then I've never met anyone, or I've rarely experienced people getting upset for telling what you think is the truth.
Right.
You know, they're like, it's like, this is how I feel, so I'm going to say it. And then they sometimes get annoyed at, you know, how the thing that you think is true.
Right.
But I've been trying to crank up the truth quotient in my life, and like, it's really only helped overall.
Yeah. The other thing that kind of comes to mind for me is budget. You know, like a lot of times people try and beat around the bush around budget, and it's like, you need to tell me how much money you can spend so I can tell you whether we're going to work with you or not. It's not a matter of, you know, whether I want to work on the project. If the project seems cool, I need to know how much money you have, because if it's not enough, you won't be able to hire us.
Right.
So you might as well just, you know, rip the Band-Aid off, tell me right away, and I can tell you yes or no, or if it's reasonable, or, hey, we may need to cut some features from an MVP in order for you to fall within that budget. And, you know, if your product is successful, you will come back to us and we will do another round of work at some point in the future.
I understand people's hesitance to tell that, though, I guess, right? Because it's kind of they probably think it's a negotiation tactic.
Right.
In reality, we don't really do that. It's kind of like, here's the rate and here's what we can build you if you have this much money.
Right.
But I get where that impulse comes from, at least.
So you guys had introduced the mentorship aspect at the $100 rate, and then, you know, quote unquote, pulled the rug out from under people and, you know, bumped the rate to 250, which, you know, to me makes sense because time, you know, that amount of time is very valuable to you and Chad and some of the other mentors. What was the general reception on that? Like, I get the impression that most people understood, but, you know, like we said earlier, some people just are not happy with anything that happens, but
yeah. So just to clarify, so we rolled out one-on-one mentoring. So Learn at the 100, actually at every level, basically comes with access to ThoughtBot developers and mentoring. It's
right.
Just sort of in a group format.
Yep.
So you can post on the forum with questions, or you can attend office hours in your workshop, and there's sort of group mentoring that takes place.
Yeah.
And students actually helping each other, which is great. But what we started to offer was one-on-one mentoring, like Skype calls individually at the middle plan or at the $100 a month rate. And people were like, wow, this is awesome. And everyone was really excited. And we're like, wow, everyone's really excited. This is really cool. And then we're like, oh my God, everyone wants this.
Yes.
So this was something like we very much subscribe to the like move really fast and try stuff and iterate quickly mentality. And what you have to accept with that is that you're going to screw up constantly. Mm-hmm. And that was like probably a preventable mistake. Who knows? But what it turned out was everyone wanted mentoring at $100 a month.
Right.
And, you know, we saw incredible demand for it. And basically, in terms of mentors, we have a handful that have the availability. And so very quickly, Chad and I were like doing 12 mentoring calls a day, which means there's absolutely no time to work on Learn.
Exactly.
So basically, within like 3 weeks, we're like, well, this is not sustainable. And probably in retrospect, we could have figured this out, but well, now we know it for sure.
Yeah.
So we changed it, and like you said, it became a lot more expensive to get one-on-one mentoring. And the response was actually pretty reasonable. I don't think anyone gave us like a really negative response. It seemed like everyone pretty much understood it. The response on general was like kind of like, yeah, I figured this was kind of too good to last.
Yep.
Was like what most people said, and like we're like very understanding of like, well, you guys need to have time to keep working on the service.
Right.
So I credit to our users. I think they're mostly all pretty reasonable people and can kind of do the math and think like, well, there's like X hundred subscribers. And like, if everyone gets mentoring, that's just not gonna work. Kudos to them for being cool about it. We felt, you know, a little bad cause it's like, you hate to announce something and then like pretty quickly roll it back.
Right.
But it was fairly well received.
Another question. You guys recently open sourced the Learn repository.
Yeah, we did the Rails app that runs the service.
Yes. Yep. Have you gotten any interesting pull requests, and what is your general sense on like how confident, you know, Thoughtbot is known for writing good code, right? How confident were you in releasing that source code that, you know, that it was a good demonstration of how we've developed the app and how Thoughtbot works in general? And have you gotten any comments about the quality of the code?
That's an awesome question. So Learn is probably our oldest app. I think it's been around longer than any other active thing that we have done just about that we still have our hands in. So Learn was running the workshops. So we used to do a lot of in-person workshops, and Learn was the registration system before that. And then when we started making one-off products, we sort of like bolted on an e-commerce, like one-off purchasing thing on top of that. And then when we started doing subscription, we kind of bolted on like a subscription service on top of that. And now we needed a dashboard. Like, and so it's been around for a long time, and it's done a lot of things. And so the quality of the code, I would say, is like okay. The newest stuff is the best, but there's some cruft in there that's been there forever. Like it still has a handful of cucumber features.
Okay.
And like we don't write cucumber anymore.
No.
But at the same time, I'm a believer in fixing stuff when you touch it. So like if a cucumber feature breaks, I'll move it into RSpec and then fix it. But I'm not going to just sit down on Tuesday morning and be like, oh, now's the time to rewrite some cucumber features
because
that's going to give us lots of value. It's not going to give us any value. So like they're getting slowly moved over, but there's that. I feel like the standards in our client work are like extremely rigorous and extremely high. And internal stuff for a while just had a little bit less of like that impulse to it. It was a little bit more like vacation land. And so it wasn't bad. It's like nothing like embarrassing or like horribly ugly, but it was just like not quite the same level of professionalism I think that we approached our client projects with. That's changed. We do like code review on everything and Learn now, and I think that the quality of the code continuously goes up there. And the new stuff that's getting added, I'm totally happy with. But there are some embarrassing parts if you dig around long enough. But like I said, like I don't think it's useful to sort of just sit down and say, well, there are parts of this that are bad. Let me just fix them just because, as fun as that might be.
Yeah.
It's not a good use of time. So we open sourced it, and I have this like vague sense of like a little bit of embarrassment, like because like someone posts on the forum like, is it normal to have lines that are like 150 characters long? And we're like, no, that's not normal. We usually wrap them at 80. And he was like, we haven't gotten a lot of feedback. There's just a couple people asking questions about certain things. On the whole, people have been have appreciated seeing a real app. It's like warts and all. Like here, like you can look at the history and see the weird stuff that happened, and you can see that there are parts that we don't fix, even though they're kind of bad because you know it doesn't make sense to. I would love it if people submitted pull requests. I don't want to ask people to do it. It's like I would. It's so here's the thing. I think it's a sneaky way to get a free code review. If you submit a pull request to the Learn app, I will absolutely do a code review on it. And if it's good, then we'll merge it. But I don't want to be like, hey, customers that are paying us money, fix our code for us. And, you know.
Right.
So I think it would be maybe a good learning experience for some people and maybe like a good bragging thing. It's like, I have contributed code in the Thoughtbot repo or something. So I would like to see that happen, but I also don't want to ask for it.
What part of the code base are you most proud of? in Learn? Like if you wanted someone brand new to Learn and digging through the repository, where would you point them to say, this is an awesome piece of code, you should check this out, look at the tests, look at the functionality?
I'm most proud of the stuff we don't write.
Okay.
I'm most proud of the things that we leave out of there and and simplify. It might be cool to walk through some of the commit history and to watch the subscription stuff get better over time. Because like I said, we have this mentality of like just ship it and then iterate. Mm-hmm. And so like the very first pass we did on turning this from a pure e-commerce thing, like one-off sales, to a recurring subscription thing, mm-hmm. was like pretty hilariously janky.
Yeah.
It was like, what's the dumbest thing that will work here? And like, we're like, well, we could keep using this and like change it to that and like add the string here. And like, it was pretty goofy.
Yep.
And it's gotten steadily better with time. And like now matches and now like is kind of reasonable. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't look at it and say like, what are these guys on? So maybe I think the value, it might be looking at things evolving over time.
Yeah.
And kind of walking through the history there and see some of the refactorings that happen. I don't know if there's any like shining star mm-hmm. parts in it. Like, wow, that's just the most beautiful implementation of whatever that I can think of.
Have you guys used it as like a coding playground a little bit? Like, you know, we've talked about active model serializers or like page objects or some of the more bleeding edge ways in which we approach problems and solve them. Is there anything in there that's like that's kind of crazy?
It's kind of unofficially become like that.
Okay.
Because it's been around for so many years, it's like you can see the different styles in there.
Okay.
So like just the cucumber versus RSpec thing, for example.
Right.
And like also like, okay, the way we write our describe blocks versus context blocks versus whatever has changed a bunch over the years. And you can see that like certain tests do one way and certain tests do the other. Mm-hmm. And it's a bit of a bummer because like a consistent code base is very nice. Like you like to have things consistent across a project, but like it's not consistent. Mm-hmm. And so it's like you go into a spec file and like, okay, well in this file, they're using this sort of pattern. Mm-hmm. And so you follow the pattern and then you look at another spec file. It's like, oh, and then this one, there's a slightly different pattern. So I guess I'll just follow the one that's in this one. And
yeah,
it's a bit of a bummer. It'd be nice if it were really fresh and clean. Mm-hmm. I actually petitioned in the beginning to start a new app when we started mm-hmm. this project. Sort of me versus Chad, and Chad was like, no, let's use the existing one. And who knows who was right. We almost definitely got to market faster because we could sort of leverage the existing thing. But the penalty that we did pay on that is that there's more cruft, there's more debt mm-hmm. in there, and lack of consistency because it's literally been years. Mm-hmm. So there's like different, you can see different eras of ThoughtBots testing philosophy,
right.
of ThoughtBots modeling philosophy, naming schemes. It just kind of got a little bit of everything in there. Mm-hmm. It's not too painful because consistency is, you know, not the most important quality of
right.
code, but it's a little goofy sometimes. Mm-hmm. We're just trying to keep it getting better over time. If the
exactly.
needle keeps moving a little bit more positively with all our commits, then mm-hmm. that'll help. We yep. recently instituted Stanley Metz's rules for the application. Mm-hmm. So we're writing like really short methods, really short classes,
right.
trying to be consistent about that, which is something we do anyway, but it's nice to have something in the README, which is like, hey, it says 5 lines and you made 10. So go fix it. So along those lines, so we talked a lot about the code quality of Learn. Like that's kind of interesting and all, and it's also kind of not important.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird. Like one of the biggest surprises for me about this position is how easy it is to feel like you're getting useful work done and actually not getting any useful work done.
Mm-hmm.
So a month or two ago, we had like our sort of retro meeting, and I was like, so last week I shipped this thing mm-hmm. and it's out. And we realized we're not going to write a blog post about it. We're not going to announce it to our users because it's very back-endy. And it's only about like useful to like 30 people.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow, that was a really terrible use of a week. And like during the whole time, I feel like I'm productive. I'm refactoring this and I'm like changing that to be better. And like this is going to be so much better after I'm done. And like it was, but no one cared.
Mm-hmm.
And so like it's very easy to feel like you're working on important stuff and then be like, wow, actually no one cares about this. This is
yep.
So I have to split my time between like making sure the app is awesome and doing things like making sure metrics are in place and like making sure the database is consistent and all these goofy backend things.
Right.
But also being like, okay, what do the users actually care about? Well, none of that.
Right.
So let's make sure we're also doing things that they care about. So I'm trying to figure out a good split of my time on that.
Right. Yeah. That's interesting because it feels like, you know, you could take that and apply it to other client projects and, you know, refactoring and testing in general. It's like, okay, what's the value and actually how can you weigh that and figure out, you know, what some of the goals are? It's like you can quote unquote cut corners a little bit and ship code, or you can write tests, or you can refactor. And it's, you know, it's interesting being on a product side just because, you know, for us, you know, when we're working for clients, we feel like we know exactly what's best and what will continue to move the product forward. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because I feel like I hear that a lot when you're actually working on a product. It's like you do kind of sacrifice some of that stuff in order to get features out the door and try and make money off of it. So
yeah, and there's that constant balancing act between like technical debt and mm-hmm. speed. Because the way code quality does impact your users is your ability to bring new features to the product.
Right.
So we try not to accumulate a lot of it, mm-hmm. and we try to be like pretty aggressive about paying it down when we can, because it really will make new changes harder. That's the argument, right? Otherwise, you just keep accumulating debt like crazy because it always is a little faster to ship the next thing mm-hmm. until it's slower and then way slower and then much, much slower because like it's just it's so hard to change this code because it sucks.
Right. Yeah, I think the way that I describe it is like you have a moving truck and you can just start throwing boxes up to the back of the truck and you can fill the truck up really quickly with a bunch of boxes, right? But when you need to start putting more and more boxes in there, it's like, okay, well, now I need to go in there and stack the boxes and make sure everything kind of fits together so that there's more room, because at some point you will run out of room and at that point you need to kind of reorganize everything. And I feel like that's kind of like shipping features and refactoring in general.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely. And that's a good analogy, because on average the app always does more with every like month, right? Mm-hmm. Like you rarely take away jobs from an application. I'm petitioning to kill one of our Learn's jobs, but mm-hmm. It's rare that it's like, okay, this week we killed two features that our app used to do.
Right.
It's always like, add this, and this, and that, and that. And that's when it gets really tricky. Mm-hmm. So you got to be pretty aggressive about paying that debt down.
Yep.
At least sometimes. But it's hard. It's a hard balancing act.
Yep.
It's like everything else in software. It's like pros and cons of different approaches, and you got to, that's why you make good money, is because you have developed the intuition to mm-hmm. figure out what to do when.
So last question.
Yeah.
Because you're a managing director, I'm assuming you have a play in hiring people. Mm. Have you hired anybody solely to produce content? Mm. And is that a goal? I mean, is that kind of what you're shooting for at some point?
Yes. So we actually hired Mike, who's producing our podcast right now, recording it, manning the board, because we have a ton of editing to do. So Mike is our sort of producer slash editor slash video shooter and audio recorder and all things media. And we realized we have a ton of work to do in that area. So because we produce now 2 podcasts, and we make a bunch of videos for Learn, and we edit a bunch of stuff, screencasts, mm-hmm. things like that. So we realized, there's actually a lot of work to do here. Mm-hmm. And Mike had been with us part-time for a while, doing a good job. So we were like, let's just do this. Let's pull the trigger. So Mike is our sort of first full-time You Make Media person. We're also bringing on a bunch of people internally. So we have Matt Manjo is joining the Learn team. Mm-hmm. He's already a developer here, but he's going to become under our aegis, under our banner. Mm-hmm. First thing he's doing is updating his workshop for Rails 4 and Ruby 2, like you are.
Yep.
And then is going to be producing a bunch of content for us.
Cool.
When we've hired Drew Neal, creator of Vimcasts, mm-hmm. author of Practical Vim. He made an awesome series of screencasts for us called Navigating Ruby Files with Vim, which is like seriously fantastic. And we're in talks with some other people to do some stuff.
Cool.
Which more details forthcoming.
Yeah.
But there's a we make a lot of our own content, but we realize, you know, we can go faster if we get some subject matter experts to make content on their own. And so, we're totally not against purchasing that, spending money for that, because it's content is kind of the thing that runs the engine here.
Mm-hmm. Did you have anything hush-hush that you want to maybe drop a hint about, or anything that you can?
JavaScript, front-end JavaScript frameworks.
Okay.
We have a Backbone class.
Yep.
We have a Backbone workshop that is being given right now. It's sold out in 20 minutes. And so there's clearly a lot of demand for that. So we're going to turn that into our like more standard video-based workshop. Right now it's sort of like a live format, which doesn't scale at all, obviously. Mm-hmm. But we're going to change that to video format. We're going to hopefully ship that as soon as possible because everyone wants it. Mm-hmm. And there's more there as well. There are other JavaScripty frameworks that are useful to know about. So we're looking to beef up our content in that area.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, thanks for stopping by. Thanks for flipping the tables on me. It was fun to be interviewed on my own podcast.
Thank you for the opportunity. It was a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Cool. So if you'd like to access the show notes for this episode, you can go to thoughtbot.com/giantrobots/71. Today's podcast was recorded, edited, and produced by Mike Manor. mentioned earlier. Thanks for listening.